Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
The Ford Motor Company was tired of losing. The iconic manufacturer had powered Sir Jackie Stewart to three Formula One championships in the late 60s and early 70s, a glorious chapter in a 40-year partnership, but their newest endeavor was a mess. After three miserable seasons from 1997 to 1999, the Wee Scott sold Stewart Grand Prix to Ford, who called their new team Jaguar Racing. Unfortunately for Ford, Jaguar was doomed as well. In 2004, Ford decided they were done with Formula One and started looking for someone to buy the remnants of Jaguar. Luckily, out of the ashes of stodgy tradition and mediocrity, an energy drink company was eager to take the reins. That's right. Red Bull had decided to launch an official Formula One racing team. Little did the world know that they were about to change racing forever. But how has a team that's been around for less than 20 years become one of the most successful Formula One organizations in the world? Who are the personalities that made Red Bull what it is today? And how does all this lead back to a toothpaste businessman with a wicked case of jet lag? Crack a fresh silo! Nice. Because today on Past Gas, we're talking about Red Bull Racing, before they were the powerhouse team we know today.
Podcast.
It's about cars, it's not about forts.
Why can he do that? No, tell him to stop going in the pit lane like that.
That's
is that Max
real
Verstappen?
Audio from Max Verstappen.
That wasn't bad, Max. That was pretty good. That was funny. All right.
You can do all the Max quotes if there's any in this episode.
You're cast, buddy.
No. Ah, yes, my first role.
Max Verstappen. Hello, everybody. Hello, YouTube, and wherever you're listening to this on. This is Past Gas.
Yeah, wherever you're listening to this on.
Yeah, that made sense in my brain. My name is Nolan Sykes. I'm joined, as always, by my two co-hosts. Across from me is Joe Weber.
What's up, Wink Wink Nation? I'm here for you.
And James Pumphrey.
You get down off of there. That's my new.
Cool. Awesome. I love new.
Look for it on our shirt.
Get down off of there.
Did you ever see Will Ferrell's SNL audition tape?
It was really funny.
One of his characters is just a guy yelling for his kid to get off the shed.
Get off that shed. They turned it into a sketch.
Really? SNL,
That's pretty funny. Yeah, we're talking about Red Bull Racing this week. A team that I was rooting for pretty much the entire time I was watching Formula One from the beginning until Max won the championship.
I was and I kind of shocked at how quickly you flipped on them.
Well, it's because it just wasn't right.
What's the opposite of a fair weather fan?
Turncoat.
I'll take turncoat. Traitor, sure. Yeah.
Traitor to the Red Bull Nash.
Hey, they can come at me. I've talked about this a bunch.
Dude, don't
on say
anything
podcast.
You're gonna regret. Don't cash checks that you can't.
I won't. Because my ass can cash can't. Them all.
Don't let your mouth write checks that your ass can't cash.
They can cash it, all right.
You mentioned in the intro cracking open a silo of Red Bull. A silo is a 24-ounce can. That would kill someone.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, these are famously 8.4 fluid ounces. I'm glad we cleared that up. Okay, so what do you guys know about
A tube of bull. I know it used to be goop.
It did.
We're
going to get into that.
I think it was the last Up to Speed ever was on Red Bull. I wrote it, and a lot of it was about the goo. And I was like, oh, this should be about cars soon.
B-
But I mean, goo.
Goo is sick. People love goo. People love slime. People love goo.
There should be more like pouches of goo as food.
I thought various slimes and goos was going to be like, you know how like you thought like quicksand was going to be a bigger factor in your life? I don't know.
In the 90s, they were pushing a lot of Go-Gurt. And
there was a lot of Go-Gurt.
Like purple ketchup.
Exactly. The purple ketchup.
Why is goo always got to be sweet or sour? I want like a nice savory goo.
That's called a demi-glace.
Yeah, or like a gravy.
Yeah.
Gravy.
That's our new business right there. Packets of edible demi-glace.
Goo. Savory. We're a savory goo company.
With maybe some
Jack
Black mushroom chunks
covered in gravy at the Nickelodeon Kids Choice Awards.
Beef bourguignon pouches. You know, we do have is a Signal Award for best road trip podcast.
Oh, yeah, thanks to everyone.
So thank
who voted.
You guys for voting. Thank you for listening to our show.
Yes, thank you.
And our old war stories.
The bronze Siggy for best road trip podcast.
Yeah, it's called the Siggy.
Today we're talking about Red Bull because this Wednesday, Donut Racing Show, our Formula One podcast, is back. All right, the show is hosted by me, Nolan, as well as motor journalists Alanis King and Elizabeth Blackstock. We're going to switch some stuff up for the second season. We're going to be recapping major stories, but also doing deeper dives into the world of Formula One. We're going to be going weekly as well, so make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out.
It's basically like InfoWars, but about cars.
Yeah.
It's like InfoWars meets Joe Rogan meets Impulsible.
Yeah, but with like a racing kind of twist.
Yeah, with a racing twist. Not too much. Mostly cigars and watches. And crypto.
Yeah. My apes are doing horribly.
Dude, I got one of my apes back, but I'm still missing two. So if anyone sees my apes, don't buy them.
I called
Jimmy
Fallon. I was like,
why'd
you sell me this ape, dude?
Yeah. Three of my apes got stolen.
Which is weird because they're, like, how do you steal? They're digital.
Dark, the meta. They got the metadata. So I got one back. Don't ask me how. But it's two of them are still gone. So if you see my apes, don't buy them. Give them back.
The year was 1974. Thai businessman Chileo Uwidia whipped up his first batch of Krating Dang, a gnarly liquid mix of sugar, water, caffeine, and taurine with a little splash of B12 vitamin.
You gotta have that little splash.
You got a little splash of B12.
The word Krating Dang translates to, maybe you guessed it, Red Bull. And impressively, the label Chileo chose for his product was almost identical to the one we see today.
That's pretty rare.
It's a pretty sick logo.
It's awesome. It's one of my favorites. I love labels. I love companies. Thailand was rapidly industrializing during the 70s. And as a result, Krating Dang became very popular with construction workers around the country. After a long week of working, these blue-collar boys, along with many other Thai folk, enjoyed watching their favorite pastime, kickboxing. And as a result, Uwidia decided that Krating Dang would be the perfect sponsor for the sport, and thus the company's involvement in the world of athletics began.
We're in a weird mood because we all listened to rap tracks that we recorded 10 years ago, and I instantly started sweating as soon as I started playing the song.
It's like, wait. What did I say that afternoon in that recording studio?
We're also drinking Red Bull.
Yeah. I'm all hyped up and jittery.
I'm jacked. About halfway through this, I'm going to crash. And you guys aren't going to have fun.
Cut to 1984, and people all over Thailand are using Krating Dang to stay alert on the clock. But outside of the country, the super drink doesn't exist. Until an Austrian toothpaste merchant named Diedrich Mateschitz landed in Thailand on a business trip.
He's like, oh, I come from the goo world in Austria. I'm going to go check out the goo.
He's a goo magnate of a different sort, yeah. The flight from Austria to Thailand is 12 hours with no layover, so Diedrich was extremely jet-lagged when he arrived. Until, as legend has it, someone slapped a can of Krating Dang in his hand. After he slurped that goo down, the jet lag evaporated, and Diedrich is ready to do some toothpaste business.
Nice.
Which is what I call brushing my teeth.
Time to go do my toothpaste business.
Diedrich knew.
You put on a suit, too.
Yeah. Diedrich knew a genius idea when he saw it, and soon tracked down Chileo. The two ambitious businessmen quickly partnered up and tweaked the recipe to fit European tastes by adding carbonation and cutting back on the sweetness. They cut back on the sweetness?
It was more
for Europeans.
I can't think of anything sweeter than what I'm drinking right now.
Your personality.
Aw, thanks.
Your disposition.
Aw.
Then in 1987, Red Bull GmbH was formed.
What country has the coolest, like, incorporated?
Definitely not GmbH.
Oh, I think that is pretty cool.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of like it. Any German business is GmbH.
Gehecht in American Bean Einhausen.
Beanhaus.
I like GmbH.
I want to see the movie about Dietrich just like jet lagged and all hopped up on energy goo.
Yeah.
Running around Thailand trying to find this Chileo guy.
Yeah.
He's like,
you'll need to tell me who makes this goo. I must meet a man who makes this wonderful goo.
It's one of those cameras that's like strapped to your head. So like everything in the background is moving, but your head, and he's like sweating and just like running through the alleys of Thailand.
Down for the night, top.
But Dietrich, the toothpaste.
The toothpaste, Dietrich.
After the company was formed, Dietrich then hired a market research firm to test Red Bull's prospects in the West. And the results, guys, they weren't good.
They loved it. Oh,
yeah. The participants hated it.
Wow.
Years later, Dietrich said, quote,
people didn't believe the taste, the logos, the brand name. I'd never before experienced such a disaster.
But the savvy Austrian ignored the firm's research and took Red Bull Global anyway and began marketing to young professionals and college students. Red Bull would show up at a college campus and hand out cans of Red Bull. And soon enough, the Western world was hooked on that delicious carbonated goo.
My friend Allie Krines, shout out. Allie Krines, she went to Clemson, and her first job in college was driving this little Mini Cooper around
with a can on the top.
They also had Suzuki X90s.
Oh, that's cool.
With the can on the back, and she was like, there's something big happening, and I really shouldn't tell you. And I was like, what? She's like, Red Bull's coming out with a 12-ounce can.
Whoa.
That was like huge news.
Wow.
Did you you had that like in your back pocket when you wanted to like contribute to a conversation?
Yeah, Red Bull's coming out with a 12-ounce can.
I was the first to know.
I could have toppled their business. But I didn't. I can keep a secret. Dietrich Mateschitz was a huge fan of auto racing. So in 1989, shouts to Taylor Swift, Red Bull decided to expand beyond kickboxing and sponsor a race car driver. Ferrari F1's Gerhard Berger. My favorite F1 driver is Dom Dom Hot Dog. The season was far from a fairy tale. Gerhard didn't finish 11 races that season, but in the races that he did finish, he claimed second twice and won once.
Whoa.
Obviously, the season could have gone better, but Berger's glimmers of hope were enough to keep the company optimistic about their sporting future. As the company entered the 1990s, they expanded their sponsorship net. They focused on extreme sports like skiing, BMX, cliff diving, and skateboarding, all of which fit their extreme brand identity.
And street luge.
Street luge. God, what a sick sport.
I loved watching Gravity Games and watching the street luge. It was all white guys with dreadlocks.
I can't imagine a worse way to die than being on like
a rail with eight wheels.
Yeah, and sliding under a car, and suddenly your nose is in your brain.
Yeah.
What about getting eaten by dogs?
That sounds fun, honestly. Compared to street luge death.
I would hate to be eaten by dogs.
Or ants.
Ooh. Oh, ants would be horrible.
Ants. Like, because
you know they're going to get in your nose and all your nine holes.
In your throat.
Yeah, and just eat you from the inside out.
In your butt, in your butt, in your butt. In
honestly,
your butt.
It'd be quite exfoliating, though, so you might feel pretty good for a second.
For a second.
Yeah.
You would feel like agony. A new babe, but then they'd get to your organs. A pig can eat a lot of human flesh, Turkish.
No thanks, Turkish, I'm sweet enough.
Red Bull also created their own unique events like Flugtag, where contestants to this day drive homemade gliders off a 30-foot high platform in Vienna. Oh, I want to do this.
My cousin did this in Chicago, and I think he won. He had a big hot dog shaped glider, and they all wear hot dog costumes and jumped into the
lake. Have a Flugtag award in your family?
Yeah. It's no Siggy, but, you know.
And from there, they got wilder. Red Bull also sponsored events like soapbox derby racing, cliff diving, double dutch, which is jumping rope, and downhill hockey racing.
That sounds is sick crazy.
It's insane, dude. It's on ice.
You guys are, wait, what? You guys are familiar with this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They play hockey.
It's called crashed ice.
Yeah. They're wearing like ice skates.
And there's like jumps, and it's a downhill like park made out of ice.
That's crazy. So sick. In 1995, Dietrich decided that he wanted to get more involved in Formula E. Red Bull inked a 10-year title sponsorship deal with the Sauber F1 team with drivers Hans-Harald Frentzen and Jean-Christophe Bouillon behind the wheel of the Ford Zetec V8-powered Sauber. Heinz, dude, they sponsored a guy named Heinz and a guy named Berger? I'm getting hungry. I'm starting to have visions of a summer barbecue. Heinz took 9th in the Drivers' Championship, and the team took 7th in the Constructors, the best results in Sauber history. But this wasn't enough for Dietrich. He didn't want to be in 7th. He wanted to be in 1st. In 1997, Red Bull became a title sponsor for Jackie Stewart's Stewart Grand Prix team, backed by Ford. The season was disappointing. Though the cars were decent midfield runners, and driver Rubens Barrichello placed 2nd at the Monaco Grand Prix, the cars were ultimately unreliable. By the end of the season, Stewart Grand Prix had 6 points out of 17 races, only finished 7 of them. By the end of the season, Stewart Grand Prix had 6 points, and out of the 17 races, they only finished 7 of them. They ended the season in 9th place in the Constructors' Championship. 1998 was even worse.
Oh, how?
Yeah, if you can imagine. After 7 races and 4 retirements, driver Jan Magnussen was replaced by Jos Verstappen.
Oh.
Huh?
Hmm.
Follow the money. The father of current Red Bull golden boy, Max Verstappen.
Why is he gonna in the lane? He's not supposed to be there.
It's kind of weird to be like, yes, my family, multi-generation Red Bull racing drivers. Red Bull is in our blood. Our blood is energy goo of its own. I drink your milkshake. It turned out that this swap didn't do much for the team, as he only managed to finish 3 races out of the 9 remaining and left Stewart Grand Prix after the season ended. The team ended the season with 5 points, none won by Jos, by the way, but managed to climb 1 position in the Constructors to 8th place.
I saw a clip from some talk show where Jos and Max were talking to someone, and Jos seems like one of those like sports dads that's like unrelenting.
He's not a good guy.
Also, Max was just talking like they were like, what's the big difference between you and your dad's career? And he's like, well, I've won at least 1 race.
The next season started off with a bang. Both of the cars overheated while lining up on the grid with small fires breaking out.
Oh, good.
Fires, plural? Sheesh, Luis. But the team eventually pulled it together and ended the 1999 season in their best ever position. 4th in the Constructors' Championship. But it wasn't enough for Jackie Stewart, who decided he'd had enough of team ownership and sold his team to Ford outright.
Would you like to buy my team?
We'll be right back with more of this story, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Ford decided a rebrand was needed and dubbed the kind of old, kind of new team Jaguar Racing. Ford's idea was to use Formula One as a promotional tool for Jaguar, their premium car company. However, despite the branding, the team continued to use Ford Cosworth engines in their cars with no Jaguar engineering whatsoever. That makes sense. The extra funding and publicity that Ford brought to the track was clear from the very first race. The team had kept Stewart driver Johnny Herbert.
Johnny Herbert, but you son of a bitch. Get down from there.
Get off that.
But they also hired the 1999 Drivers' Championship runner-up, Eddie Irvine, as his teammate.
Eddie, what the hell are you doing out there, too? You both get down there. We got to do a race to do.
Despite this pairing, the new Jaguar team finished ninth out of 11 teams in the Constructors' Championship with only 4 points. Yikes. The team manager, Wolfgang Reitzel, stepped down at the end of the season, and kart racing champion and successful team owner Bobby Rahal stepped in for 2001. The switch-up didn't help the team, and halfway through the season, Jackie hired Niki Lauda as team manager.
Ah, cool.
But this didn't really boost team morale. Rahal and Lauda were often at odds with each other, and after Rahal made a joke to rival team Jordan about giving driver Eddie Irvine to them, things had gone too far. This is Niki Lauda. Quote,
Bobby defended the issue by saying it was nothing more than a joke, but unfortunately, jokes like this with existing drivers do not work very well,
said Lauda.
And I should know because I am very funny. I stepped in and ended whatever discussion was taking place at the time. Eddie Irvine will line up for Jaguar next season and nothing will change.
As a result, Rahal was fired due to, quote, operational differences. Despite all the craziness in the paddock, driver Eddie Irvine scored the team's first podium in Monaco, of all places, in third place. And as a result, Jaguar finished eighth out of 11 teams in the Constructors' Championship. Kind of a far cry from fourth. 2002 was another rough one for the team. Niki Lauda had to effectively perform his and Rahal's jobs, and even though Jaguar finished seventh this year in the Constructors' Championship, Ford was beginning to get antsy about their investment in a team that couldn't seem to improve. They improve one spot per year.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is, but it's not great. Driver Irvine was able to score another third-place finish at Monza, but it would be the last podium Jaguar would see in the sport.
I still want, like, a 2004... Lincoln LS,
because
it's got a Jaguar V8 in it, and they're super cheap. No one likes them.
And it's probably because it's got a Jaguar engine, probably brakes.
But it looks like a GTA version of like a 5 Series.
Yeah, they're interesting looking. I remember someone in high school had one that was like lowered on wheels, and it looked pretty good.
Oh, it would make a good VIP car, honestly.
So, after 4 years of management and team personnel turnover, along with hundreds of millions of dollars pumped in the project, Jaguar hadn't come close to Stewart's 1999 success, claiming only 2 podium finishes in 85 races.
Yeesh.
That's really bad. And it probably didn't help that during the team's final season in 2003, Jaguar received a great deal of publicity when 2 of the team's mechanics won a giveaway for an inflatable donkey from Shrek 2 and began photographing it around the paddock. They even set up a website for the pictures called Donkey Does F1. This is crazy because I watched Shrek 2 last night.
What?
Whoa. And was in the shower thinking, like, how am I going to incorporate how good a sequel Shrek 2 is
they
into the podcast, man?
They did it
that
for
is
you.
Weird. It's the universe, man.
Dude. Follow the money.
Dude, Shrek, okay. Now that the door's been opened.
And I'm a believer. I believe it.
I had a weird coincidence happen to me last night. I was about to order a pizza, and I was typing to my girlfriend about, she was at this fancy restaurant, and I was typing the word bougie as this guy behind me was talking to his friend, whoa, saying bougie, and I was like, whoa, that's a weird random word.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Just real quick, in the discussion of great sequels that are better than the original movie, you got, you know, people always talk about Terminator 2, Aliens,
yeah,
what have you. Shrek 2 deserves, yeah, to be in that conversation as well. It is phenomenal. Just want you guys to go revisit that film. Okay,
let's continue. Is that heavy on the gingerbread man?
At the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jaguar's PR team. I can't believe that happened.
Jaguars, you have to get over it.
I'm done. I'm past it. Jaguars PR team unfortunately banned Donkey as soon as they caught wind of the joke, but it was too late. Allegedly, Donkey had become a symbol of resistance for the team, who were increasingly worried about their jobs, something that boiled over once Ford announced that the team was up for sale. At the season finale in Brazil, it was announced that Donkey would be auctioned off to benefit the charity Children in Need, and the majority of the drivers, as well as Formula One CEO Bernie Ecclestone, signed it. The inflatable Donkey was sold in December 2005. Nobody knows where it is today. If you know where it is today...
It's in a private collection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
James, I would love to hear...
It's at the Getty.
...your impression of Jackie Stewart getting mad over seeing the donkey around the paddock.
Well, maybe one day you will.
Anyway, Ford decided...
I like how it's the majority of the drivers. So, like, some of the drivers were like, nah. Yeah. It's for charity.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Nah.
Anyway, Ford decided to sell the whole operation to Red Bull in September of 2004 for a symbolic $1 price after Diedrich and company committed $400 million to the team over the next three seasons.
It's a lot to commit.
Yeah. In a deal that included Jaguars' Milton Keynes headquarters, along with their wind tunnel and test facilities in Bicester and Bedford, Diedrich and Red Bull finally had their own team for the 2005 Formula One season. Upon the purchase, Red Bull head of development, Mark Gallagher, said, quote,
What's the way this guy talks, you think?
How about, like, Gallagher?
Yeah.
Many of F1's sponsors come into F1 because it's sexy and exciting, and then bring their corporate joylessness with them and take all the sexiness and excitement out. They've made the sport so elite that fans have been alienated. Red Bull aims to reverse that. Smash!
I'm going to crack another Red Bull.
Yeah? Okay, see you later.
Right. It's just, this podcast is going to get, like, increasingly fast by the end of it.
Yeah,
and loud.
But shit's first move was to hire Team Principal, okay?
Meneschitz's first move was to hire a new team principal. He first asked Gerhard Berger, their old driver, but when he declined, Diedrich went to his second choice. A former Formula 3000 driver named Christian Horner.
The horn dog.
Horn dog!
Horner was a talented driver in his own right, racing in Formula 3000 until the late 90s. Formula 3000. The then 25-year-old convinced a few investors, including his father. Christian then persuaded P1 Motorsport founder Raleigh Vincini to take on the role of his race engineer, bought a second-hand trailer from Helmut Marko, and was eventually joined at Arden by driver Kurt Mulikens. However, it was during a preseason test that Christian followed driver Juan Pablo Montoya during a high-speed corner when he realized he was not capable of replicating that level of commitment that his competitor had. As a result, he decided to hang up those racing coveralls once and for all and focus on management.
There is something kind of admirable about being like, nah, you know what? This guy's clearly better than me.
Or just like, I'm not really willing to do that.
Yeah.
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 But yeah, that is pretty mature for a 25-year-old.
Arden won three straight Formula 3000 team and driver's titles from 2002 to 2004. It was around this time that Christian started looking for an opportunity to move into Formula One. Fortunately for him, this was also when Diedrich Meneschitz was ready to hire a new team principal. In January 2005, Christian was hired to head the Red Bull team, which made him the youngest team principal in F1 history at only 32 years old. Horner's effects were immediately felt in Red Bull's first official season of 2005. He oversaw construction of their new car, which used a Cosworth engine and chassis from the old Jaguar, something that significantly eased the financial load. Horner was also bullish on signing David Coulthard and Christian Kine as their drivers. Red Bull claimed more points in their first two races than Jaguar had the entire previous season. Finished in a respectable seventh place in the 2005 Constructors' Championship.
That's
not bad
great.
For a new team, especially considering Horner only had 8 weeks of lead time before the first race of the season.
Wow.
That is pretty crazy.
It takes us longer to shoot videos.
Yeah.
To top off their successful year, Christian Horner signed revolutionary designer Adrian Newey as chief technical officer in the offseason. So things at Red Bull Racing were about to get a whole lot Red Bullier.
You can learn more about Adrian Newey in our episode about his life from back in March of last year. That is episode 129. By joining Red Bull, Adrian Newey was taking on a significant challenge. The six-time Constructors title holder was a savant with aerodynamics and engineering. However, his previous teams, Williams and McLaren, had decades of championship pedigree. Red Bull Racing had nothing. In an interview this past December, Newey recalled, quote,
"Red Bull Racing was always that."
Newey recalled, "Red Bull was always having big discos. Was this team that would be taken seriously? But if you went beneath that veneer, then to me it looked like, yes, it had all the building blocks. Just trying to win races with a new team was something that really intrigued me.
I'm so intrigued.
Really got me going.
Keep talking
really got
about
my blood
building
pumping,
blocks.
And I love Red Bull, the drink. I put it in my teacup so I feel fancy when I'm drinking."
Newey joined Red Bull midway through 2006, so he didn't have a huge influence on the car's design that season. Red Bull switched from Cosworth power units to Ferrari, but the results weren't as spectacular as anticipated. David Coulthard scored Red Bull's first podium in Monaco, but overall they finished with 18 points less than they had in 2005 and faced a growing challenge from its newly founded junior sister team, Scuderia Toro Rosso.
That was as early as 2006?
Well, yeah, I didn't know that.
Whoa.
Here's a little quick tangent about Toro Rosso. The team made its debut in 2006 after Paul Stoddart sold his remaining interest in the Minardi team to Diederik Mateschitz. Toro Rosso was founded to serve as the junior team to Red Bull with the goal of developing its drivers for the senior team and is today known as AlphaTauri. So there you go.
Must be nice to have a feeder team, eh?
Yep. Anyway, the first complete car Newey developed at Red Bull was the RB3, which was powered by the Renault RS26 engine. There were mechanical issues and at least one retirement in each of the first seven races of the 2007 season, but mid-season updates improved pace and reliability, which led to their best finish at the European Grand Prix, where Mark Webber claimed third and David Coulthard fifth.
Is Mark Webber Australian?
I believe so.
I thought he was German.
No. He's Australian. Mark Webber.
Mark Webber.
Red Bull finished.
I love Webburgers.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that that show where the Weber family has a burger place and the mom is a real
You better watch out. I'm going to go get dying. We're going to kick your ass.
I used to do a character called Out of Breath Mark Wahlberg.
I'm like, "Hey, thanks for having me over for dinner. Do you know your elevator's broken? Here's a glass of, here's a bottle of wine. Is Donnie here yet?"
Red Bull finished 07 with a respectable fifth place in the Constructors' Championship, showing the world that they were a team on the rise.
We're a team on the rise.
That's the montage of them doing well in the movie.
We're a team on the rise.
Around.
Team on the rise. Team on the rise is Red Bull Racing.
This, honestly, us drinking all this Red Bull.
it's really crazy.
Team on the, I had a cold brew on my way to work.
I did a big bang
I was
too.
Like, it'd be funny if I just stacked all these Red Bulls up in front of us. And, you know?
They're very tempting.
They're tasty.
Yep.
They drink like, we talked about this before, they taste like Zots.
Yeah, they taste like a Zot. Mm. And you look like a thought.
By the halfway mark,
that host over there.
I do have the biggest cake.
Yeah,
donut.
You got a dumpy. Joe walks into a room and his butt comes in 5 minutes later. Bag it up. Beep, beep, beep.
But so big, you can see it from the front.
By the halfway mark of the 2008 season, Red Bull was in contention for fourth place in the Constructors' Championship. David Coulthard finished third in Canada, but the team scored only 5 points in the last several races, dropping them to seventh overall at the season's end. Additional salt in the wound was that Red Bull's Renault-powered RB4 was being consistently overshadowed by its Ferrari-powered sister team, Toro Rosso.
Oh, that's not good.
That's not good.
You can't have the apprentice overshadowing the master.
No. You know, it's like Nolan getting more views than me.
No one just did the Kermit meme.
Makes me want to chase this Red Bull with a bullet.
However, significant aerodynamic rule changes came in the 2009 season, which meant Newey was allowed to basically start from scratch.
Time to go to work, chaps. All right, Newey, time to show them why they hired you.
This clean slate would prove to be a massive turning point for Red Bull Racing. And so would the promotion of a Toro Rosso driver named Sebastian Vettel. I have a weird pain in my chest.
What? From Red Bull?
I think so. Huh. I'm going to ignore it.
Yeah, ignore it. That's what I did.
Yeah.
Young Seb began kart racing at the age of three.
Three!
And in 1998, the 11-year-old was accepted into the Red Bull Junior Team, a development program for up-and-coming talent. Vettel torched his way up the racing circuit during his teen years, claiming prestigious titles at the Junior Monaco Kart Cup in 2001, right before 9/11 happened. The Formula BMW ADAC Championship in 2004, and the runner-up in the 2006 Formula 3 Euro Series. Seb was leading the 2007 Formula Renault 3.5 Series Championship when he was called up to be a test driver for BMW Sauber Formula One team midway through the season.
My parents have videotape of me as like a four-year-old at my first go-kart track.
Yeah. Mm.
And I'm doing great, and I look super serious. Like, I'm just like...
Dude, you could have been an American F1 driver.
I know. I can't... Like, my parents were like, oh, he loves it. This seems like a great passion for him. And then they just never
let me stop raising you.
Yeah.
Yeah, shouts to Joe's parents for screwing that one up.
No, they had other going on.
I guess.
We'll get back to more past gas, but right now, a word from our sponsors.
At the time of his race debut, Seb was 19 years and 53 days old.
Someone had to figure that out.
Yeah, they start with the day he was born. One.
Yeah.
Looking at a calendar.
Oh, this was a leap year. Got to start over.
Oh, yeah. You got to figure out leap years.
What?
You got to add leap years.
Yeah.
Wow. It is kind of hard. I know how I would do it, but it would take me a minute. The youngest driver to... Because you got to figure out if he was born on a leap year or not.
Yeah, and you can't just go back on a computer. You have to find old calendars of each year.
Yeah.
To count. Because you don't know if it's accurate online.
Yeah. He was the youngest driver at 19 years, 53 days to take part in an F1 race weekend. But he quickly proved that he could hang with the big boys. Driver's twice his age. Vettel stunned the field when he recorded the fastest test time in his first free practice at the 2006 Turkish Grand Prix, and then did it again at the next GP in Italy. Vettel also set the record for collecting his first penalty 9 seconds into his career as the driver exceeded the pit lane speed limit on the way to the track. In 2007, BMW promoted Vettel from his test driver role to replace Robert Kubica at the U.S. Grand Prix, where he started in 7th and finished in 8th, setting yet another record as the youngest driver to score a point in Formula One. That youthful record, among many others, has since been broken by Max Verstappen, who we'll talk about more later, because if we didn't talk about him, we'd be bad at our job. After his stellar showing with BMW, Sebastian moved to Red Bull's F1 little sister, Toro Rosso, where he took the 2008 season by storm. Actually, by storm might be a little generous compared to what he was destined to do in his second season. But his rookie campaign was good, okay? Despite pissing off teammates, competitors, and F1 officials more than once, 21-year-old Seb became the youngest driver to ever win a Formula One Grand Prix when he took the Italian stage by a whopping 12 seconds. Again,
dang.
Max Verstappen would eventually shatter this record as an 18-year-old, but Sebastian's win was still massive and led to him being named Rookie of the Year at the 2008 Autosport Awards. He was also dubbed Baby Schumi, after the GOAT, Michael Schumacher, by the German press.
That's what people call me, too.
Baby Shumi?
Yeah, because that kind of looked like Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who kind of looks like an adult baby.
Yeah, and you come full circle.
You can imagine how much of a baby I look like.
Yeah. Naturally, Red Bull decided to promote Sebastian to Red Bull Racing for 2009, where Seb got along famously with Adrian Newey's RB5 and won the Chinese GP with teammate Mark Webber, finishing second. Mark Webber, get down from there, you son of a bitch. There's all these drivers climbing that thing. I know it's fun, but it's dangerous. It's wet. It's raining. You're going to get struck by lightning, Webb. Mark Webber's your brother, right?
Yeah. He wants to distance. He's like estranged from our family, yeah. So he added a B to his name.
Maybe that's why your parents didn't let you do karting, because Mark was such a racer, no, and then he left to tore the family apart.
Yeah.
This was Red Bull's first ever race win. Five more wins followed as the team dominated the last half of the 2009 season. Seb finished in second in the Drivers' Championship, while Red Bull finished second in the Constructors. Nice.
You know what's weird is you're also a Lewis fan, right?
Mm.
But they have been winning for so long.
Yeah.
They're likable as winners, whereas Red Bull is kind of unlikable as winners.
Well, the way that they won was just kind of greasy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's like not exciting at all.
No.
Yeah.
I actually feel bad for Max because it's like you're not going to like be like, no, I don't want to win,
right.
It's just like kind of a crummy way to win.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Massey.
So I feel bad for Max. I do.
Michael Massey was rightfully fired after that.
Keeps me up at night. How's he feel? You know?
I'm pretty good.
It's tainted. You know?
He's probably sitting in his weird bachelor apartment with no furniture, with his sim in the corner.
It's so
complaining
funny
about the Wi-Fi.
It's so funny that's like in the corner. Yeah. Anyway, the 2010 RB6 changed everything. The team took 15 out of a possible 19 pole positions, and at 23 years old, Vettel became the youngest world drivers champion in the sport's history, a record that still stands to this day. Adrian Newey became the most successful F1 designer ever when he won the Constructors' Championship for a record third team. The next season, Vettel and the RB7 were nearly untouchable, scoring 11 wins and 15 poles, while Webber took 3 poles and 1 win of his own. Sebastian ended the season as the youngest ever double and back-to-back world champion, and the team celebrated their second consecutive Constructors' Championship. The team was on a roll, guys.
And then they threw him to the sharks. They threw him out like so many old garbages.
Actually, in 2012, a ban on the exhaust-blown diffusers in 2012 complicated the development of the RB8. But Brainiac Adrian Newey...
Way to go, Brainiac.
...continued to push technical boundaries. He drew his fair share of controversy over additions like floor holes and engine maps, but in the end, it was all legal, and the results spoke for themselves. The team claimed another constructor's title. Mark Webber took 2 checkered flags, and Seb took 5, including 4 of the last 7, which sealed his third consecutive driver's championship.
Jeez Louise, this guy sure can drive.
Yep.
You know, Adrian Newey would probably say, controversy.
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 The 2013 F1 season.
The holes in the floor.
The 2000.
And they'll do it like Fred Flintstone.
Trust 5 me, horsepower. I'm a brainiac. Last time I checked, your door to your office didn't say brainiac on it. Mine did. So why don't you cut a hole in that floor?
Why don't you watch some old episodes of Fred Flintstone and tell me I'm wrong?
Yeah, have you ever seen how fast a Flintstone gets to work?
The 2013 F1 season was a bit of a roller coaster, but fantastic nonetheless. Newey's RB9 was supremely fast. But even after Seb won the first 2 races, he and his increasingly jealous and agitated teammate, Mark Webber, suggested that tire issues kept them from going full speed. After Newey made some magical tweaks, Webber and Vettel utterly dominated the second half of the season. Vettel won the last 9 races and won the Drivers' Championship in one of the most dominant performances ever seen in the sport. Newey wrapped up his 4th straight Constructors' Crown, while Sebastian's driver title streak of 4 put him alongside racing icons like Alain Prost and Juan Manuel Fangio.
That's quick.
Yeah. Let's put this in perspective, Joe. Formula One is the most difficult, most expensive, and most prominent racing series in the world. and a team that didn't exist less than a decade before is absolutely thrashing teams that have been there for over a century, like Ferrari.
It's basically like what MLB did, expanded in the 90s, and then the freaking, you know, the Diamondbacks.
Florida Marlins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. They come and win a World Series out of nowhere, whereas the Brewers, who have been around since 1969, have made it to the World Series one time in the 80s and lost.
Yeah. Because they're too busy eating all that cheese.
You leave cheese out of this.
You know it's a problem.
Cheese has been weaponized in our office lately. This is an update for all our past guest listeners. Michigan has declared war against Wink Wink Nation the state of Wisconsin. Porter declared war. He's from Michigan. And our production manager is from Detroit. And he threatened to take away all the cheese from the office. So that's what's going on right now.
On the heels of Red Bull's stunning championship run, Adrian Newey was approached by Ferrari in 2014. Newey was basically offered the world. Ferrari wanted to put Newey in charge of both road and race cars and pay him double what he was making with Red Bull. Newey said, "It was a difficult decision. It cost me a lot of sleepless nights deciding what to do and who to go for. In the end, it would have felt wrong to walk out on Red Bull." What an idiot.
Yeah, that's money.
Money, Adrian. You ever heard of it? It's called, you use it to buy crap that you want. It's pretty much the best thing on the planet.
Yeah.
I am not loyal.
Good to know.
You're loyal to money.
Yeah, the only thing I'm loyal to is money.
The only people James is loyal to, Benjamin Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin, George Washington,
two guys
Ike Eisenhower,
Benjamin and Franklin.
The Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and
Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln.
And Sacagawea.
And Sacagawea. And all of the states. And quarters.
So actually a lot more than you thought.
And not Roosevelt, because he's not on anything. With Newey safely in the paddock, Red Bull's 2014 season began with a wonky Renault power unit, but they bounced back to finish second to Mercedes in the Constructors' Championship. Daniel Ricciardo, who signed Nolan's mini fridge.
He did.
Mm-hmm. It's a little piece of donut. Lore for you guys.
It's a Red Bull mini fridge.
It's a Red Bull mini fridge. It is signed by Daniel Ricciardo himself. I have one of his hats. It's very small.
Did you take the mini fridge to a race?
No, to our office.
It was in the trunk of my car, and then Daniel Ricciardo was in town. Some higher ups at Donut were having lunch with him.
Mm.
So Phil and I went over to where they're having lunch. I got his autograph.
Carried in your mini fridge.
It was in the trunk still.
But okay.
Yeah. He came out to my car.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Signed. Oh, yeah. I'll sign that. Oh, you gasser.
Yeah, mate.
No, he called me worse names than that. he is quite a vulgar guy. I don't think a lot of...
But he's always smiling, so you can never take offense.
He's a nice guy. I'm just saying, like, I think a lot of the like newer, like, Drive to Survive quote fans do not realize that he is... a vulgar man.
He's so funny. Yeah. I just noticed you're drinking, you have two open cans. One is a sugar-free and one is a regular Red Bull.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to hit that right mix. Got to get that octane level right.
Just right.
I don't like 87 or 89. I like an 86. Daniel Ricciardo replaced Mark Webber and immediately made his presence felt when he took three victories. Meanwhile, Sebastian Vettel won another record. He became the first champion since 1998 to fail to win a single race the year after a title.
Whoa, that's a bummer.
Yeah. As a reaction to his startling drop in the standings, Seb took his talents to Ferrari at the end of the year.
I like Seb.
Me too. Everyone does. In the 2015 season, Red Bull was low on speed and suffered from reliability issues. Daniel Ricciardo and Sebastian Vettel's replacement, Daniel Kvyat, only got onto the podium three times, and RBR finished fourth in the constructors' standings, their worst result in 7 years. Luckily for Red Bull, however, a baby-faced renegade that went by the name of Max Verstappen was about to make history in the coming
year. A little Dutch boy with chocolate around his mouth.
Enter Max Verstappen. He pulled his finger out of the dam, got into a race car,
put on his tulip covered
put on his tulip
helmet.
Covered helmet and his wooden freaking shoes.
Oh, the guys! The
clip,
guys
clop,
do
clip, clop, clip, clop, all the way down
too
pit
small
lane.
For
went freaking
wooden
covered
shoes.
Himself in flowers. Did a midsummer thing.
I think that was more like Norway or Sweden.
Yeah.
Well, he's eating chocolate regardless. Probably some pickled shark.
I do want to try that.
What's that called again?
Pickled shark?
Yeah.
Vachstinschankel.
Stop or starpin or something?
Starpin.
Definitely that.
Big old
Farm
jar
from starvin'?
Starpin.
Oh, it's called Far From Starvin'.
Because when you're eating it, you are.
Far from starvin' on the Far From Starvin'.
But stopping's far from starvin'.
Red Bull discovered a prodigy with Sebastian Vettel, and in 2016, they introduced the world to another. Max Verstappen was born to race. His father, Jos, also competed in Formula One, as we mentioned.
But didn't win a lick.
Yep, and his mom, Sophie Kumpen, drove in several kart formulas.
Oh, cool. What?
Needless to say, Max followed in his parents' footsteps, showing his genius through the kart and Formula 3000 circuits before getting called up to Toro Rosso in 2014, at 17 years old.
Holy crud.
Yeah.
When I was 17, I didn't even race in any professional series.
When I was 17, I moved into my first house outside of my parents, and I didn't know that you had to tip the window AC unit like to face outside. And so it just dripped into my room and like soaked the carpet. And it was like months before someone was like, you should tip it so it drips outside.
Let's jump forward to 2016. Before the Russian Grand Prix, Red Bull announced that 18-year-old Max would replace Daniel Kvyat to join Daniel Ricciardo and drive for the big boys. However, despite Red Bull's new partnership with Honda and a much more reliable Renault power unit, the team was always a step behind Lewis Hamilton's Mercedes. Then Max shocked the world by winning the Spanish Grand Prix and displaced Vettel as the youngest driver to do so. Max is 18 years and 228 days old.
Wow.
In his first 8 races with Red Bull, Max achieved 6 top 5 finishes, including 4 podiums. Dude, it was so exciting to be watching at this time because, like, you could tell that this kid was really good during the Toro Rosso days. The Toro Rosso wasn't a super fast car necessarily, but Max was able to do some really fun passes with it, and you're just like, man, this kid's going to be so good. And then when he moves up to Red Bull, you're like, oh, yeah, he is really good.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
2017 and 2018.
He is really good.
We're disappointed.
Yeah.
2017 and 2018.
I feel like I'm on coke right now. We're so much Red Bull pumping through
I know,
my veins.
This was a bad idea. and 2018 were disappointing years for Red Bull, thanks to issues with the Renault power unit. Let me just get a little.
Yeah, man.
Are you doing a gummy with your Red Bull? Nolan is dipping his finger in the Red Bull and rubbing it on his gums.
Mm. Call it a gummy.
Legalize it.
Both years, the team placed third in the constructors behind Mercedes and Ferrari. But there was hope in 2019 when Red Bull switched from Renault to Honda.
Woo!
The 2019 the 2019 transition from Woo! Renault to Honda was impressively smooth. Max won 4 Grand Prix and more or less carried the team. Daniel had left the team in 2018 for Renault, and both drivers that Horner pulled up, Pierre Gasly and Alex Albon, didn't make the impact the team was hoping for.
I remember this part in Drive to Survive because it was very dramatic. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know what to do. He's like, I think I'm going to leave. And then just jumps in the ocean with his shoes on for like this 30-foot clip.
By 2020, after Albon only achieved 2 podium finishes all season, he was replaced by Sergio Perez for the 2021 season.
2021 was a wild season, as many of our listeners know. With the help of Perez, Max won 11 of 22 races and brought Red Bull to their first Drivers' Championship since 2013. We've talked a lot about that season a lot because it was super controversial. Not going to dig into it too much. This is when I stopped kind of like rooting for Max and Red Bull because
he treated his teammate like absolute trash.
Well, that was last season. In 2021, the relationship was a lot better. But yes, he's done some bad.
Sergio helped him block so much helped him win the championship. And when it came time for Sergio to get enough points to beat Charles Leclerc and get second, Max was not there for him and said, "No, I'm not going to let him pass."
Yeah, so this season should be interesting with that dynamic kind of set in stone now. If you want to hear more about this upcoming season, make sure to listen to Donut Racing Show on Wednesday.
Gotta listen to it. I'm so excited to hear it.
Let's do it. Despite...
Like designer.
Lord of mercy.
Despite an early challenge by Ferrari, Red Bull dominated Formula One season in 2022. Again, teammate Sergio proved to be a fantastic supporter for Max, who slaughtered the field with 15 wins to retain the driver's crown. In the shadow of Max's feat was the fact that Red Bull dethroned Mercedes after 8 straight constructors' titles. The year wasn't without its controversies, though. Red Bull was found to have engaged in team spending that exceeded the $145 million budget cap by 1.6%, about $500,000. And though they're facing some penalties this year, it left a bad taste in the mouth of many fans.
They tried to say that it was all like catering costs.
Yeah, I'm
buzzing
I'd right
like
now.
To see a half a million dollars worth of chicken tendies.
You know, that is probably Max's favorite food. Chicken tendies.
I like butter sandwiches.
Christian Horner had this to say about the controversy.
We've always stuck by the principles that we're a race team here to go racing.
Christian Horner said after Verstappen locked his second straight F1 championship with 4 races to go.
We're not afraid to take difficult and bold decisions. We're not a corporately driven organization. We've always been independent and a little maverick, which is kind of redundant because have you ever seen Tom Cruise? He is a little maverick.
Christian Horner said Verstappen's second title was a beautiful tribute to Red Bull co-founder and owner Dietrich Mateschitz, who passed away on October 22nd, 2022. A misty-eyed Horner said of his boss and close friend, quote,
"He had a dream, which was to have a Formula One team. He did that, and in the end, he had 2. He gave us all an opportunity. He believed in us. He backed us. And this is for him. We are just tremendously grateful for everything he has done for us as individuals, as a team. And we are going to celebrate his honor tonight. Energy goes on me." From Adrian Newey to Sebastian Vettel to Max Verstappen, to think that some of the most important racing figures of the last 50 years took a chance and stayed loyal to a company who started off with no racing credentials is pretty wide. As for Christian Horner, his 18-year run at Red Bull makes him the longest-serving team principal in Formula One. He's led the team to 5th on the all-time wins list with 92 victories, only behind big boys Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes, and Williams, all of whom have been around for over half a century.
And he's married to Ginger Spice.
Ginger Spice!
So he's hashtag winning.
Hashtag
he
winning.
Winning.
Turns out he did want to be her lover, and he did get with her friends. Ginger.
I just want to give a quick shout out to Caden Ellisands for making us a law firm logo with a Harley badge. It's pretty great, and I told him I'd give him a shout-out.
Hell yeah, good. Nice shout-out to Caden. We got some fan mail this week. "Hi, Nolan, Joe, and James. I'm a 12-year-old from Australia, and I've been watching Donut Media since 2018, which is like half their life.
Wow. I can't wait for the next video or podcast you guys make. You guys are the best automotive channel. Thank you very much. And podcast, thank you very much. Keep it up, you legends. I have one question for you all. What did you do before Donut? Joe, how didn't you start?
I was
off?
A chef for about 12 years and was desperately trying to get out of that kitchen.
Joe and I met because we used to both do comedy, like improv and sketch comedy. Joe did stand up. So that's what I did before Donut. I was a comedian and an actor. That's it.
A successful one, too. You've been on a bunch of shows.
Not successful enough, Joe.
And I was in college. I needed an internship, and Donut gladly had me on board. It was cool. And then now here we are.
This is your first job?
First, like, career. I've had a lot of jobs before this, but, like, first, like, career job.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
Worked in machine shop, worked in warehouse, worked in Vons.
You went to school for TV?
Yeah, I did TV production was my thing. Yeah.
Well, like, the opposite in 2020 during the pandemic, kids went to TV for school.
Whoa, okay.
And that letter was from Morris from Australia. Big thanks to Morris.
Someone wrote us an email and said they love hearing me eating snacks all the time. I don't eat any snacks during this podcast. So, just wanted to make that clear, put that out there. If you think I'm eating snacks, you got another thing coming.
Follow the boys at Joe G. Weber, at James Pumphrey. Follow me at Nolan J. Sykes. If you'd like, go subscribe to the Donut Racing Show for more Formula One news. Big thank you to our producers this week. We got Christina Felski, as always, and Gavin Kinzel, as always.
And our writer, Luke Klompien.
Just clomping at the bit.
He's Dutch, too. Clonk, plonk, plonk.
Clomp, 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 clomp. Wooden shoes, pickle shark, pickle shark.
All right, I'm going to go take some CBD to offset this caffeine. It's a great idea. See you later. Bye.